The Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 75, Dead or Alive, or Review.
Welcome to The Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of The Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts.
Hey, survivors, and welcome to another fine episode of The Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I am Mark.
And tonight, hopefully, well, I kept on saying in the last episode how things probably wouldn't sound too bad, but thanks to Kyle and a nice plugin that I had to remove reverb, it sounded okay. It wasn't as good, but hopefully this will sound even better this week. My recording desk, if you want to call it, is still a work in progress. So, but hopefully I sound okay. Mark says I sound okay. So,
you don't sound like a Cylon like I did a few times.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. Mark has a microphone, or at least a setup that sometimes makes him sound like a Cylon. It's quite funky. We will be discussing season 8, episode 11, which is titled Dead or Alive, or, and then something else that Negan says. But before we get started, we've got actually quite a bit of feedback remaining to discuss both our last episode and the previous episode of The Walking Dead, which was The Lost and the Plunderers. So, let's hear Simon.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
All right. First is from Cheryl. And I don't think I have thanked you the first couple of episodes back. Cheryl is helping us out getting the our show doc together, collecting all your feedback. So, Cheryl, thank you for all your help with that. It really helps. Anyway, she had to say, as to how the walkers got into Alexandria, the gate was left open. 2 weeks ago, Michonne closed the gate and scraped that walker's face. Yeah, I do remember that, but what I couldn't figure out is how the gate got left open and who left it open. Do you have any insight on that, Mark?
I can't remember exactly. I remember somebody went through it and then they closed it. Now, we're talking on which door was this? This was the kingdom?
No.
This Alexandria.
If you recall the cold open, the Michonne segment from last week, she struggled with the door, and we had basically a pile of walkers that were next to the door, but the door was left open. And my question was, well, how did that happen? Because, you know, the saviors never got inside Alexandria. Everything that they did, they were launching stuff from over the walls. So, you know, I couldn't figure out who left the gate open. You know, Gabriel wasn't around, so it wasn't him.
Yeah, and zombies don't open doors apparently unless they're part of that whole Darabont season.
Oh yeah, the first season where they had a few more skills than they do today. But yeah, anyway, if anybody has any insight about that, I would love to hear. So send us some feedback for next week. All right, let's move on.
Lara Willie Swink says, thanks for the podcast, fellas. Even though it was a little late, I still only got to it today. Mark, though I never listened to this podcast before, thanks to Brian, I was listening to The Watching Dead And the guest host on that show did mention that a lot of people don't feel that the relationship between Carl and Negan was built up enough. I think you're correct that having a history with the comics is something you bring to the show that non-comic viewers or readers would not have, but that is something that they should have given to the show only viewers as well. Also agree with that Brian, that they wasted too much time at Oceanside and with the trash people to really formulate that story between the two characters. From a real-life business standpoint, it seemed to me that they were going to pursue that storyline more in depth. But then AMC just decided that they didn't want to pay Chandler Riggs, and the writers had to rush to find a way to kill him off, but retain that relationship storyline somehow. What do you guys think? I do agree. They didn't want to. I think there was a little bit of an issue with pay, and that had something to do with it. Plus, they were trying to run away from the comic to be a bit diverse, to be a little bit controversial, because that whole season 7 opening of Glenn getting beaten down, and then of also adding Abraham to that mix. But a lot of the viewers of the show didn't realize that Abraham in the comics had died like earlier on in episodes in comparison to the actual TV show.
Not so that much earlier on.
But regardless, he was. Denise took his death in the comics. She got the arrow through the eye instead of Abraham. But they needed, since they knew that some of the viewers were comic readers, they were going to throw Abraham there first to throw people off, and then give the traditional, okay, we're going to give you Glenn, which was the double whammy. And honestly, it really hurt everybody in the long run, because everybody loved Abraham. I mean, he was a staple in all his catchphrases and the character itself. Yeah, he was a bit comic booky in the way he would speak and everything. But then you had Glenn, who is the purest of the group, who was always, a positive light, so, showing a positivity in everybody, even though he got led astray a little bit. But the thing was, is that once you got rid of those two, and then we were stuck in a season that was full of everybody being, oh my God, we just want this over. They had to change their writing ability. And then come season 8, they needed something big to happen, but they didn't know who to give it to. And with Chandler Riggs, and I think with the discussion of his pay and him being at that age where he could be viewed as an adult and be paid as an adult, and his character being strong and the family wanting money. And then there's that struggle of how do we create a different story? I personally think that was a culmination of everything, of all that was going on. And then they just decided, fine, we're just going to write you off. We'll create something really special out of it, which they did, honestly. I wasn't upset with the episode. My issue with the actual hero episode that showed his death was the hype. That was really what I felt about that episode. But you know, it was too much hype. We knew it was coming, but it was very well written, and it wrote him out in a good way. And I have a funny feeling we're going to start to see some of those things come out in the next bunch of episodes towards the end of the season that ring into Rick's mind. So it's going to play off in a good way, but unfortunately we lost Chandler in the end. But those are my thoughts.
Well, I wish I could agree with you, but I don't. Of course, that makes for a better podcast. Some of what you said, I agree with, but I don't think that episode was particularly well written. There were elements of it that were, but I think I talked about it last week that it kept on going away from Carl at times when it should have stayed with him. And then you had, like, you know, people like Tara and Rosita and even to a lesser extent, Daryl, that really didn't like give him a proper goodbye. And scenes with Michonne and Rick should have made me cry. And I say that because everything usually on the show makes me cry, but it didn't impact me the way that I expected it to. So, but that's kind of a tangent to what I was going to say about what Laura said. So essentially I agree with a lot of what she said. I think we had a perfect storm here. You've got Danai Gurira, who is of course doing, you know, the Marvel movies, and it's not just Black Panther, but she's going to be in the next, you know, couple of Avengers movies.
Yeah.
And AMC would be crazy to try to interfere with that because, you know, that's her having a higher, you know, zeitgeist or whatever, having a higher, what's the word I'm looking for?
Following.
Yeah. More people knowing about her can only help this show. And at the same time, you know, for starting with season 8, you've got Andrew Lincoln and Norman Reedus's contracts per episode they're making a lot more than they used to. I think back in the day, they were making about 90,000 and maybe 80,000 or something like that per episode. And now they're well over a half million. I have to go back and look at the exact figures, but I know it's over a half million. And that's, you know, that's a lot of extra money, you know. So, and at the same time, this is happening at a time when the show's ratings are going down. And unfortunately, and we'll talk about this later, ratings are going even lower than I think even AMC expected. So you know, and then of course you have with Chandler Riggs, the fact of the matter is he's an 18-year-old playing like a 13 or 14, maybe even 15-year-old. And if they do a time jump, they're probably still not going to be able to go far enough to actually get Carl to Chandler Riggs's age. So that makes him a target for being killed off, you know, especially he's been there for right since the beginning, and all of that kind of makes him a target. And if you recall, originally Chandler Riggs was going to go to I think Auburn University. So he was going to be busy with school. Danai Gurira was going to be busy with those films. And certain things that should have been built or told in the story, like the Chandler relationship with Michonne and Rick and Enid, they didn't focus on those things like they should have. And they brought in some characters, or should I say some groups, that didn't hit well with most of the fans, like, of course, the trash people, which, you know, not to beat a dead horse, but I don't like them. Of course, they're dead now. But you also got the Oceanside people, which I know the Oceanside is from the comic book, whereas the trash people are not, but the Oceanside comes after the war. So did they need to get brought in at the time? I don't think they did. So, you know, it's all stuff we could have seen. Carl's relationships, even with Sadiq, they could have been developed more. And for whatever reason, and especially I think because they brought in, you know, Oceanside and the trash people, and, you know, Michonne wasn't available. All of that, I think, affected the whole death of Carl. I think if they had, especially the trash people, I think that they were a big mistake. I think Gimple was looking at it and saying, wouldn't it be cool if we had a Mad Max group but it's too soon in the apocalypse for a society to grow like that. I mean, last episode, we finally got more of an explanation of those people, but still, I just can't buy them. And, they were annoying. let's just face it. And I think it's going to be one of those things where Gimple is going to be, you know, say 5 years after the show is canceled, and you know he's sitting at a Walker Stalker Con or some other convention, and he's finally going to fess up and say, "Yeah, that was probably a mistake." So, anyway,
I do agree with you. I didn't like the trash people either.
I don't know many that like them. There were a few, but I am not one of them. The only thing good I can say about them is the first, you know, main episode where they were featured, I played as part of the end of the Walking Dead talk through. I played the Kirk and Spock fight music. That's the only thing I can say positive about those people. And that, of course, was to celebrate the fight of Winslow and Rick. All right, well, let's move on. Our next bit of feedback is from Scott, and I'll hold his last name for a minute, and to say, loved the show. Link on Facebook was much easier to access. Tried other ways and couldn't get it. Like the comparison of the saviors to the mafia. There is a protection payoff, but only from the saviors and not the dead. Aaron staying behind doesn't make sense. Stupid hunch. If he lives, he hooks up with Jesus. Well, you know, if he hooks up with Jesus, Jesus would be a wonderful partner. Because Jesus is a dream. I had to play that. I've been dying to.
I know you did. Yeah. But I think he really wanted to be with Tom Payne.
Yeah. Anyway, he finishes up and he says, great show. Keep it up. And that was from Scott Kirkman.
Yeah, that's my brother.
Aw. Or should I say? All right. Well, thanks, Scott. And thank you for having a brother that is my new co-host. And so far, so good. Of course, I've known Mark now for what, about a year and a half, I guess.
Yeah, about a year and a half.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to this episode. So, season 8, episode 11 is titled very strangely "Dead or Alive Or," and that was written by a name that that is completely new to The Walking Dead, Eddie Guzelian. I think that's how you say that. Now, I had to look him up, and he is known as a producer for two animated shows that I've never heard of. I hate to say, maybe some of you have. It's first one is Cuckoo Harajuku, and the second is Lolly Rock. Hmm. But he also wrote the screenplay to the horror thriller Blood Punch, which I saw that it came out in 2014, but I don't know anything about that movie. So, but anyway, I don't know if he's a possibility to come on staff, for next season or not, but, I mean, he did okay, I think, this episode, directed by Michael E. Satrazimus, who has been with the show for quite some time and directed many episodes, The Grove probably being his best known. All right, so let's move on to our ratings for Dead or Alive Or. Mark, what did you think of it? out of 10.
I give this 8 out of 10 saviors not in Father Gabriel's vision.
Poor Father Gabriel. He had some pretty messed up eyes, didn't he?
Hell yeah.
All right. Well, I kept on vacillating between two things to call this one, but I thought it was an okay. It was decent. It was good, but I didn't love it. It was about the same as the mid-season premiere, so I gave it the same rating. 8.5 Hypocrite Terrors. And we'll explain that in the feedback later, I think in the weak sauce. But I could also say 8.5 Mushroom Heads.
Those right. Look delectable, though.
Oh, don't they? All right, let's. We've got some listener ratings. So, Mark, start off.
PB and Zane, 7 out of 10. Follow the Swamp Walker Road. Oh my! Said to the tune of "Follow the Yellow Brick Road." Laugh out loud.
Mark Olivier Dufour says, "Okay, episode. I give it 7.5 out of 10. Hungry captive saviors."
Steve Brown. 9 out of 10 unseen deaths. We don't see Carson die, but he is dead, which kind of comments on something I had stated on a message board and saying, oh, he's got to be alive. He's got to be alive. And everybody's like, no, he's dead.
Well, we did see him get shot through the heart. It looked like he got one right in the chest.
Yeah.
Glynis Goltz gives it 7 out of 10. I love what she called it. Book of Eli. Very fitting, if you've ever seen that film.
Cheryl Fox, 5 out of 10. Let's kill Dwight's.
Ouch.
Yeah.
And she goes into it more in the feedback. Tilly Creary gives it 8 out of 10. Rusty bear traps.
All right. Larry Willie Swink says, not much to write home about on this one. 7 out of 10 gelatinous Walker terrines. I will attempt to give all my ratings a food-related angle this half season. Okay. This is interesting.
And on the Facebook group, she gave a picture of a terrine. And because I was like, what? How do you say that? And what is it?
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's it's a gelatinous meat and vegetable thingy, I think. Which I am curious to see what it tastes like, but then again, maybe not. All right. Let's move on to our awesome sauce. Awesome sauce. PB Insane, who also goes by the name of Judy in real life. She says her first awesome sauce, well, actually her awesome sauce is car keys and a map in a piggy bank.
Steve Brown, great walkers this episode. On Talking Dead, Denise Huth revealed that they made that swamp on a Sonoya set and then drained it to make it woods again.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool when they explained that. It was was just a made-up swamp. Glynis Goltz says, Gabriel, that was a great Walker shot he made with blurry vision and just missing the bear traps. His hearing was also super zooped up.
He was Daredevil.
Oh, yeah. I like Daredevil.
Cheryl Fox, the Fungus Walkers. I love the makeup this week. Outstanding.
Tilly Creary says, awesome sauce is the end of the episode with Negan's plan. This is going to give the show an interesting way to kill off a bunch of random characters, and I look forward to the plot armor that will hopefully keep my favorites safe. Yeah. Negan's plan. What do you want to say about that, Mark? I mean, one thing I will say that's good to have you on this podcast is, you know, like Ruthie and I, we don't read the comic book. And so, you know, you coming in as our host, you do Of course, you probably get them for free since you're a Kirkman.
I wish. it's actually pretty cool that they bring this. And this is one of the fewer finer points that came out of the war that was in the comic that actually made a difference. I'm looking forward to the idea of when they bring that into play. They only touched on it, and it was not verbatim of the actual scene in the comic. In the comic, they actually had a ton more walkers. And Negan doing his thing with Lucille and getting it smothered with the bat smothered with the zombie guts. But that is something that's put into play, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that shows up in the actual show. But the thing is that Negan doesn't realize or know in the show what Rick already knows in the show, because Rick in the show knows that they're all infected. And once Rick's group, who is also aware of that, they're all infected, that if they get in touch or contact with this in some way via an open wound or something, that they will turn in some way. So I'm curious to see how this develops in the actual show and how the writing goes.
So do you think it's going to work? Or 'cause I know a lot of people online have had some misgivings of that. They think that it won't work based on what the show has developed so far. Do you think it will actually work?
I think they'll it'll happen to maximum three people, but I don't think it's going to be as huge of a device that it was in the comic that, you know, that it's going to be on the show. I don't think the show is going to further that to any extent. The show will probably show maybe one to two, three people get infected that way, but that's about it. And there might be that fear of Rick. And as we saw him at that, that scene with the pained glasses at the end, who knows, was he hit with the bat, you know, Lucille's bat at that time? Was that how he was wounded? I mistaken the idea, and I looked again at that scene, and I brought it up in another conversation on Facebook at one point, where I thought I saw a knife through his hand. I don't think that was a knife. I think it was just his hand got stabbed in some way, and you see the gun that he has on his holster on his right side, on his right hip, and it kind of looked like something was through his hand, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
But I have a funny feeling because we see him with a gut wound. We see him with a hand wound. It could be him thinking, I'm infected, but we don't know where it's going to play out. But I don't think it's going to play out as much as it did in the comic into the show. I think they're trying to just use that as a way of deterring people or straying them away from their own thoughts of how the show is going to go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you equate it to a bite, if somebody gets hit with Lucille or an arrow and it breaks the skin, I would say that it is possible that it could be equated to a bite, because if it's got the virus and somebody gets hit by a bat and it breaks the skin, or they get hit by an arrow or a bullet that, you know, has been dipped in the guts, it's possible that it might work. But then again, they may end up like Gabriel right now, who got infected, but not infected with the actual virus that kills you, you know? So
just really sick.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so I am curious to see how this is going to play out. All right. We got one more awesome sauce before we get to our own.
Lara Willie Swink. Awesome. The Swamp Thing walkers. Disgusting. Gabriel's bloody eyes were pretty cool. Cool too. But what's with the whole Walker Guts retcon? If Walker Guts could kill you, Nick, from fear, would have died ages ago. Meaning that, you know, it's like, yeah, because, if you remember, Nick from Fear of the Walking Dead smothered himself, I don't know how many times in that in those shows in that season alone. He just constantly smothered himself to cover himself from the dead, and he went swimming in those things, and he never got sick.
Some people some people don't take baths that thorough.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like Daryl.
Very true. Yeah. Nick, he got that stuff all over him and like all over the skin and everything. So yeah, it's a good, really good point. Now, the only thing you can say negative to that, or like as a Nick in fear, is earlier in the apocalypse than Gabriel and, you know, the Negan's plan. So the guts may be much more infectious now with various, rotted contagions than it was early on in the apocalypse. So, but who knows? All right. So, now it's time for our awesome sauce. So you just gave Laura. So I'm going to give my first one.
Sure.
And that is the mushroom headed walkers. Now, I have to admit, when I first watched this, I didn't really see it, but it was only, I think, after a second watch, and I maybe heard something about it on either another podcast or what have you, that mentioned it, and I had to look. I'm like, and then when I finally saw it, I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like, all I could tell when I first saw it is that their faces look kind of weird. But, you know, essentially, they were, mushroom heads. So that's my first awesome sauce.
Not mushroom head like the band, right?
Not mushroom head like the band.
And your second was?
My second was Daryl actually speaking. That's the most Norm Reedus has said in an episode in a very long time.
And he had to shut himself up too because he was making Judith upset.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Mine would be more of Father Gabriel and Dr. Carson and how they escaped the sanctuary. How lovely was it for them to get away in a nice Jaguar? I thought it was a much needed story that we all needed to see, and what had happened after they left the sanctuary, especially about Father Gabriel's condition. We didn't know where he stood, and we know that he was incapacitated in some way, and he was sick. We didn't know how far along he was, and this gave a clear vision, or lack of vision in Father Gabriel's mind.
Lack of vision.
Yeah, exactly. And, we got to see where they were at. This was also a Tara and Dwight driven episode, and her vengeance fueled episode in my opinion, which kind of, is kind of hypocritical in a sense how she was with the governor and Dwight is with Negan. And at one time, like I said, Tara was with the governor and she was at the fences of the prison ready to shoot and fire upon these people who she didn't know. And then here's Dwight that's actually trying to turn sides, and she's ready to kill him in a heartbeat. Mainly for the fact that, he killed her girlfriend, who we've only seen in, maybe three episodes with her. But the fact is that it furthered that story. Now, mind you, we're talking within a month that she found out about Denise and how she died and who killed her. So to us, it's like years later.
I know.
But now it's, but the thing is that, we get to see that come into some sort of fruition of her taking action. Now, mind you, it took us a long time to see that, but for her, it's only a matter of weeks.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to weak sauce because, and I'm going to change the order of the weak sauce to go into a very similar point.
Okay.
You're worthless and weak.
All right, Mark, why don't you read Glynis's weak sauce?
Glynis says, Tara should take a step back and look at herself. She was given a chance after the governor. Granted, she didn't kill anyone like Dwight did with Denise, and Daryl is now sparing Dwight when he was so very trigger happy in season 8, episode 3, Monsters.
Yeah. He definitely wanted to kill, but to that, something that Tara said, and I didn't pull the quote, but So I don't have the audio, but I did write down what she said. You don't get to switch sides and everything be okay. And to that, I say, oh, Tara, my, what a forgetful memory you have. Maggie forgave you and considers you one of her best friends, and yet you were there alongside the governor when he cut off her father's head. You know, I mean, I can't say that more emphatically. Yes, Dwight did kill Denise, so there is that. But up until Dwight kind of, came out of the bushes, she nearly killed him more than once in this episode. And I don't know. I think it's somewhat out of character, somewhat, because I know she's been pissed, you know, ever since she found out about it. But like I say, she was in a similar position, and she was brought on with, you know, everyone here, and they accepted her, and you know, she should give him a little more of a chance given the fact everything that Dwight has done at this point. I think, especially after this episode, I think he's demonstrated that he is on their side. That's my thing.
Yeah, I believe that too.
All right. Well, Steve Brown, he's got a weak sauce. He says, Daryl and Tara going back and forth about Dwight's fate. So there's a pattern here. it was kind of, especially the way Daryl got all mad, and you know, then he stopped himself when he noticed that Judith was getting upset. I agree with you, Steve. It was kind of weak. The only thing that I could say, I already said that I liked seeing him actually have lines in this episode, but I would have liked more positive lines. All right, next.
PB and Zane. Tara's quick change in attitude.
Yet again, we have another pattern. Now, maybe she means the quick change in attitude near the end. I don't know. She can, Judy / PB, you can elaborate on the Facebook group. All right. Cheryl Fox, she says, so Gabriel is losing his eyesight. That will be another thing for him to feel sorry for himself about. I believe he's the weakest link, no matter where he is. You are the weakest link. Goodbye. Anyway, the saving grace is that he is now under Eugene. How is that a saving grace?
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
I don't see it.
And I'll pull this from my comments later. Eugene was a dick this episode. I mean, there really isn't any other way of expressing it, particularly the way he was talking to Frankie, the redheaded wife number 6 of Negan.
Yeah.
I don't know what number she is, but
anyway. Number 15. But yeah, him saying, you know, you need to wipe my brow later, and you need to have the proper eye protection and helmet and all that nonsense.
Well, that I didn't have a problem with, but the way he was, you know, talking down to her, I don't think that she particularly needed that, unless he was implying that Frankie was going to try to, curry sexual favor with him or something, which that's something I don't want to see.
All right. Let's
Sorry, continue. Josh McDermott, but that's, I just don't want to see that. All right.
We shall continue. Tilly Creary. Weak sauce is Tara trying to kill Dwight 99% of the episode. She's relentless with wanting to kill him and being super annoying about it. Then this one good deed and she's all, yeah, we should trust him now. What about the other times he helped the group? Those weren't good enough for her? please.
Please. And that's probably what Judy or PB in Zane was probably indicating now that I read that back. Yeah, it was kind of a quick turnaround there. You know, it's like, I guess he's a good guy. Yeah. Well, we have one more weak sauce, or as Lara likes to say, lame sauce.
That sounds awesome.
No, it's lame. Everything's lame.
She says, Tara, her character has been around for some time and has just been mediocre the whole time. The writers have given her little depth, and even though I'm sure she's a great person, Alana Masterson plays angry Tara and scared Tara in the exact same wide-eyed, clueless look for years. Yawn. Sorry. I'd never wish death for our survivors, but if she were to move to Oceanside permanently, I'd have no problem with that. Just saying.
Yeah, there's a lot of hate for Tara.
Yeah, that was a lot of weak sauce for her. That might be a record.
Yeah.
All right, Mark, what you got for weak sauce?
Not enough action in this episode, but this was justified with the Easter eggs and things to look forward to in the future episodes, like the ham radio. That was a dead giveaway. And that's something, spoilers, yeah, it was in the comics, but we didn't see this until later, but that's an Easter egg from the comic, but I don't think that's going to come into fruition, and not for another season or two. But the fact that you actually do see that, you know, there's only one person that could actually get that fixed and make it working. I was excited about that. Yeah. And on top of that, we got the Negan with the bat and everything. This is a war by all means. You know, we have to see everything going through. And that's what that ending scene with Negan with the blood and guts from the zombies and everything. And then with them, with the making of the bullets. And I just hope Eugene redeems himself in some way and makes some sort of explosive bullets or something. But that's just my thoughts.
Or blanks. Yeah, to that, I will say that with the crossover coming and Morgan, you know, moving to Fear, could the ham radio play into it?
Possibly.
Anyway, I could see it playing a part of getting Morgan to Texas. I don't know. Of course, Morgan wasn't there, but, and for that matter, Gabriel's, you know, gone back to the Savior. So, you know, I don't know how that would work, but all right. Carson is my first week sauce. All you had to do was not do anything risky to stay alive.
And you blew it! You blew it! You blew it!
You blew it! You had it all and you blew it!
You are a doctor. You should not risk yourself. And we have seen yet another example. Denise would be one that pops right into my head, of a doctor taking unnecessary risks and getting themselves killed in the zombie apocalypse. Doctors should be like diamonds, like, you know, precious metals, and be cherished and be valued and never be put into harm's way. They should be like the children who keep the children away from harm. Same thing. Not that doctors are children. I, of course, mean that if there's anything that people need in the zombie apocalypse, it's a doctor, you know? And unfortunately, Carson, he had a target on his head because, of course, Sadiq is now a doctor. And I want to speak to this now since I mentioned Sadiq. I've heard 4 podcasts this week say that he is not a doctor. He is a resident, And I'll bring up the definition according to Wikipedia. Yeah, it's on Wikipedia, so whatever. I know some people don't like using Wikipedia for definitions, but I say how gouache to that. And the definition of a resident is: a resident or house officer is a physician, one who holds the degree of MD, DO, or MBBS, MCBHB, or BMed. And I think those last three are things in not in North America, so I don't know what countries have that. Anyway, who practices medicine, usually in a hospital or clinic, under the direct or indirect supervision of an attending physician. Successful completion of a residency program is a requirement to obtaining an unrestricted license to practice medicine in many jurisdictions. Residency training may be followed by fellowship or subspecialty training. And I'm not going to read any more on that, but basically you can be a resident in many different disciplines. And Sadiq, while not an experienced doctor, he is a doctor. So stop calling him something other than a doctor, people. And and like I said, you know, I often listen to other podcasts on The Walking Dead prior to us recording. And we pushed this one back a day. I know last week we said it was going to be on Monday, but with the move, I wasn't going to be available to watch the show on Sunday night, so we pushed it back to Tuesday. And anyway, so I got to listen to more podcasts on The Walking Dead than I normally do, and I heard four out of the first five that I listened to got it wrong. So it's just a pet peeve of mine. Because sometimes I make mistakes, but I try to be accurate in the things that I say, both about the show and about anything else. And if I say something wrong, that's when the errata comes in, which is this. or if I was doing the Star Trek podcast, I would use this.
Incorrect.
But anyway, so I like to tell you guys the truth. I like to tell you guys things that are true and not things that are, you know, made up or lies. So, or just facts that are wrong. So anyway, I get ticked off when I see a guy like Sadiq not being called a doctor, and I'm going to shut up because I've talked about this long enough. But anyway, I just hate that. Anyway, and I'm going to go to my next week's sauce because it's also doctor related. And the show was criticized in the first few seasons for the black man getting killed off trope. And we saw this with T-Dog. We saw this with Oscar, with Tyrese, with Bob. And, you know, like one black character would die and another would, you know, take his place, or another character would come on and the previous black character from the show would soon die. Well, that's pretty much gone away, and thankfully, I'm glad to say. But the doctor trope, which is exactly the same kind of thing: a doctor comes on the show and then they die, and then they're replaced by somebody else. This happens over and over again. We saw this with Jenner, with Herschel, with Bob, with Denise, with Porch Dick. You know, it's just over and over again. And poor Dr. Carson, both of them fell into the same thing. So when is it going to happen before, or how long is it going to be before Sadiq's number gets called? And yeah, we know of one other doctor, actually, though. The kingdom has a doctor we haven't even met yet. So, you know, what's the possibility that that doctor is going to die before the end of the season? So,
very true.
Yeah. So that's my second week, sauce. And then the third, and I think maybe Judy said this earlier, PB said this, but she mentioned the keys in the map in a piggy bank. She thought that was her awesome sauce. Well, I thought the keys was cool, but the map in a piggy bank, like what size? It just doesn't make sense to me. Like, how could you even get a map in a piggy bank? Maps are bigger than, you know, I can't see you being able to stuff a map into a piggy bank. So I thought that was weak. All right. Well, we have some sad sauce. We've already played this one, but I'll play it again. What's your sad sauce, Mark?
Well, I'm sad that Tara didn't get to kill off Dwight. It's going to happen sooner or later. We just don't know. I don't know when that's going to happen. I really think about this.
You think so?
I have a funny feeling.
I wouldn't be surprised if Tara dies and Dwight is the one who tries to save her or something. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if Dwight makes it past the season 8. But you know, it's just a guess. Well, I have a sad sauce too, and I have to give it to Enid, and specifically Caitlin Nacon for her performance, you know, in a non-speaking role this episode. But it was finally enough to see her reaction to make me finally shed a tear about Carl. So, and I watched it again at lunchtime today and had the same reaction. It just, you know, I didn't go full out, you know, bawling my eyes out, but there was a tear that came to my eye. So we got one more, and that is from PB Insane again. She says, Gabriel's eyesight. That's what things look like when I drive at night, so I don't. All right. Well, let's move on to our regular feedback for this week.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
All right. Mark, why don't you read Todd's feedback?
Todd Schwartzberg. For a moment watching Eugene tonight, I thought, wait a minute. Rearrange the letters of his name and it spells Negan, but it doesn't quite work, does it?
Nope. All right. PB and Zane is next. And she's actually got a lot of feedback in here. Look at that. She says, just an FYI, from now on, unless I note otherwise, I am going to write my feedback as I watch the show. Just works better that way for me. Hope that's okay. And to that, I say, yes, yes. And for that matter, just remember on Facebook that you can edit your posts. So, if you get something wrong or, you know, it's too stream of consciousness, you can always go into your, comment and change it later. So, but yeah, whatever works best for you. If that works better for you, then by all means. She continues. She says, Daryl has always been my favorite character on this show. And I've heard her say some things about that. She likes Norman Reedus, even smelly, dirty Norman Reedus. Sorry.
She's a Dixon chick.
Yeah, I would say, but the opener just made me think he has become a bit of a wuss. Ooh, did I really say that about my Daryl? I know others have felt that same way for some time, but I just got there. How does that happen? What in the world are the writers doing to him? I mean, even his whistle to get others' attention under the bridge was a weak little whistle. It's like he has to look to others to make a decision. Now, yeah, maybe that's good, but I like when he just spur of the moment does stuff. Please bring back the old Daryl. I mean, yeah, he chose the swamps, but only after listening to both Rosita and Dwight. I'm going to cry now. All right. She continues, feeling bad for Maggie. Just stinks having to make decisions for everyone. Time outside the pen for good behavior. Is that guy nuts that they are Negan's guys? Why would they let them out for anything? Well, in the end, they did. And I'm sure that, as Julia Roberts said in Pretty Woman, big mistake. Big, big mistake. Oh no, Gabriel and the doc got caught. I was liking that storyline. I just love it whenever Carol and Daryl get reunited. Yeah, that was also kind of sad too. her last points, she says, Negan is a butthead all the way. I would agree. I watched Oz lately on HBO and I saw Father Gabriel. Yeah. I forgot he was on there, and he was also in The Wire, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely those two. Steve Brown, the struggle between faith and science coincidence was great. I'm curious to see how the Gabriel-Eugene dynamic might play into Eugene's redemption, which should be interesting because the last we saw of Father Gabriel, he was brought into Eugene's bullet-making facility, and Negan announcing he figured out who got Father Gabriel out, and it was discovered that it was Dr. Carson and not Eugene. So Eugene was nervous at that point. So hopefully maybe Eugene actually talks to Father Gabriel and they're able to work something out, even though Father Gabriel's kind of blind and sorting bullets.
Yeah. And to that end, you're needing bullets and you've got a blind guy playing a critical role, someone who's recently blind. So he doesn't have the hang of, you know, any other senses that you could say, you know, touch or smell or whatever, or hearing, all those like stereotypical things, you know, supposedly that the other senses get, you know, heightened, which I think, isn't true. I think that's like a common myth, but you know, people get used to having to use their other senses, but they don't like get better. But anyway, my point being, I don't think I would put him in that role. That's just me. That's just me. Sorry, Negan, but, I think that might turn out to be a big mistake. And you know, if blanks or some bad bullets play into the storyline, it could happen because you put a blind guy, in that role, you know, just saying, you know. All right. I don't know how, but I got a couple of big ones and you keep getting a couple of small ones. Glynis is next. She says, just a note or observance from watching the reruns in the lead up to the season 8 mid-season premiere was the good interaction between Morgan and Carol in season six, episode two titled JSS, where Morgan wasn't killing and Carol was, and they pass each other on the Alexandria street after the drama. And Carol sits on the steps alone, smoking and thinking / crying of all the kills she made. Then season 7, episode 8, Heart Still Beating. After the aftermath, Morgan and Carol are both sitting on the steps and glancing at each other. In season 8, episode 9, Honor. Carol and Morgan's dynamic of Carol trying to halt Morgan's killing spree with the Saviors and Gavin. Then finally, in this episode, season 8, episode 11, Dead or Alive, or Carol and Morgan, with Henry and Morgan telling Henry it was Gavin who killed Benjamin. So maybe halting Henry's potential killing spree? Carol's words may have sunk in then. We'll just have to see if Henry is going to be all right, having, quote unquote, avenged his brother's death, but there's the chance he may find out it wasn't Gavin. I hope they don't develop Henry into a replacement for Carl. That would be so wrong. But to that, I would say I wouldn't put it past Jared to boast about it. I mean, you see him this episode complaining that the kid creeps them out. You know, I could just see him get provoked and say something like that because he's such a jerk. But I don't know the man, but I hear that Josh Michael, who plays the character, is quite a nice guy, actually. I know he's been on Brains Gone Bad several times. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I wanted to add to that. Carol could always say, hey, Jared, look at the flowers.
It's a trap.
Tilly Creary. I like this episode much more than the others in this half. The story has been moving forward so slowly, it's been driving me crazy. At least this episode had the story move forward with Dwight moving back into the Saviors. I think he's totally still on Rick's side, and Father Gabriel going through his whole journey, landing him back in a worse of all positions than he started. Side note, I don't think he's going to make it in the end. He's traveling perilously close to a moral compass territory. And yeah, anybody who shows any sort of moral compass, and Mr. Hardwick himself always says it, anybody who shows some sort of moral compass winds up dying or suffering in the end. I'm just hoping to see things play out. I'd like to see Father Gabriel survive.
I would too. And if you have to wonder if that was ever the case, that I didn't feel that way, go to the archives and listen to episode 16 supplemental. And you will hear Ruthie and I go on a 38 minute or so, I think it's 38 minutes, rant about Gabriel. This was after episode 14 of season 5, the one that Noah died. Yeah, we and of course Gabriel tried to rat the survivors out to Deanna, if you recall that.
Yeah, he tried to rat out Rick and the gang.
Yeah.
As it were, and made him look like a bad person. And I forgot who overheard that conversation and brought that up, but and they brought it up to him, and then he just changed tides and then tried to make amends for it ever since.
Maggie was the one that overheard him. It was Maggie.
Ah.
All right. Well, we have one more bit of feedback, and this is from Cheryl, who says, this to me has been one of the worst episodes I have watched. Wow. I love this show and never miss it, but something was totally missing this week. I'm not sure what it was, though. If you ever figure out, Cheryl, let us know, and we'll talk about that next week. All right. So now for our additional discussion points. I know some of these we've already covered, but Maggie still doesn't show. I really hope that when Angela Kang takes over the show, that there is a better coverage of the passage of time, like that we actually know how long things have how much time has elapsed, because it's getting a little old. I mean, if you think about it, we're more than 2.5 seasons in, and Maggie's not even showing. Like, not only has she not had her kid, but she doesn't even have a baby bump yet.
Yeah, she should be way after her first trimester, I should say. She's got to be more than 3 months in. So you have to be showing in some way. All they showed was her eating a lot.
Yeah, and that was last season.
Yep.
All right, what do you got?
I wonder when the ham radio will come into play in the future episodes. Like I said before, this is something that was snuck in, but I don't think it's going to happen this season. I think they're always going to go back to it in some way, but it definitely was a nod toward the comic. I was really into that. And like you said earlier, Daryl going off on his emotionally fueled fury trying to lead, but then he gets stopped and he stops himself because he sees that he upset Judith. And Tobin, I believe, Carol's former love interest, was with Judith, and he was taking care of her. And it made him realize that he was just being angry and forgot what they were there to do. You know, it showed a little bit something in the character. I wish they would give Norman Reedus something more than grunting and sounding like what we got out of Christian Bale's Batman.
Oh.
It's always, where's the trigger? You know, it's everything with him is always grunting and groaning and all that hoarse voice. Where was that high pitched squeal voice that we got from season one? I really want to see that Daryl back.
Oh, yeah. Or even season two, where he called Lori olive oil.
Those quick comebacks that were perfect.
Yeah.
Where do we have, where are they? We want those. But
yeah, I there's a few things that I liked, but they weren't, I didn't have awesome sauce for them. I really loved the little Sadiq Maggie moment. I thought that was foreshadowing. I have to think that Sadiq's medical skills, resident or not, will come into play, especially now that the second Dr. Carson is no longer.
And maybe that relationship between Maggie and Sadiq further as far as getting to know one another.
Ooh. That's interesting.
Yes.
Okay. Well, if that happens, I guess we will see. Okay. So one thing I don't have written here that is worth talking about. So where's Ezekiel and the rest of the people from the kingdom? Like, you know, I can't remember her name. Was it Fatima or something like that? Nabila, I think. Sorry. And the rest of them that went, I think they went to Carol's old cottage or whatever they call that. I assume. But we don't see them here. But yet you've got Jerry and Henry and Morgan and Carol, but we don't see Ezekiel. We don't see the rest of the ones from the kingdom. So just makes you wonder where the heck they are, especially Ezekiel, because Ezekiel was with Carol and Morgan and Henry in the last episode that we saw him at. So he was conspicuously not there. And there wasn't like an explanation like there was with Jesus, because Jesus is trying to find more food. Because Jesus has a way of making more bread and more fish.
Hey, you forgot water into wine.
And water into wine. Sorry. And making water into wine. That's a mini heavenly thing. If I don't play that when Jesus comes back, I'm going to kick myself in the butt. But anyway, so the other thing I have written down is I liked the how can we lose that Maggie says to Gregory there near the end of the episode. And right after she says that, then they find out that Rick's there. So, and it's funny that we didn't see Rick or Michonne this episode. That was a rare thing, especially for Rick. I don't know if he's been in every episode this season or not, but I know he's been in more episodes this season than he has in some of the previous ones. So
It could be that the way they're writing now is they realize that the bottled episodes, which centralized around one person and where they were at within certain developments within the story structure, and they centered around that, people were getting lost and not caring. So they decided to actually go through a three-tiered bottle, so you would have three stories. With this, we got Tara and Dwight. We had Dr. Carson and Father Gabriel. And then we had a bit of what was going on with the Saviors. And we didn't really see that much of what was going on in Hilltop. And I have a funny feeling with what you were saying before about Ezekiel and that other girl. And those people that were supposed to be in Maggie's cabin, I have a funny feeling a lot of those people are going to be at Hilltop because Enid just happened to miraculously show up.
Yeah.
After last week's episode where she left Aaron with the Oceanside people and she's at Hilltop now. So that's kind of a quick transition from where she was and where she's at now. And we hadn't seen her whole episode. All we got was a reaction, just like we did from Carol and Maggie and everybody else that was going on about what happened with Carl. So that was an ending shot, I think. And then I think they'll elaborate come the beginning of the next episode.
Yeah. All right. Unless you have anything else, we are going to move on to the TV ratings, which, of course, used to be earlier on. So I didn't hear what you said.
Woof.
Woof.
These were bad.
Oh, were they ever bad? Okay. So Walking Dead, and if you don't know, listeners, you see, once upon a time, I developed a little bit of an obsession when it comes to ratings, and that all has to do with a show called The Event. And as I watched the ratings decline, and eventually it got canceled, which is kind of funny because the ratings that it got, you know, 7 seasons ago would have been fine now. It would be considered a hit, but back then it wasn't. So that's what started me obsessing over the ratings. And I love obsessing over The Walking Dead's ratings because up until, well, the last 2 seasons, but especially up until this season, ratings have always been good, and they're still good compared to other TV shows, but they're down quite a bit. 2.80 in the 18 to 49 this week with 6.604 million viewers. Now, this compares to last week, which was a 2.86 in the 18 to 49 with 6.82 million viewers. Now, how does this compare? Well, I went and looked it up, and we all know that Fear the Walking Dead gets has historically gotten less ratings, but Season 2, Episode 1, Monster, got better ratings than this did. So I think it got something like a 6.7 million or something like that, or 6.67 million. I don't have it in front of me, but I know it was more, and it got a 3.1 in the 18 to 49. So that, now mind you, those ratings have dropped considerably since then, but it just goes to show you where things are right now. So this is the lowest rating since Season 1, Episode 5, Wildfire, which also got a 2.80. And in terms of viewers, this is the lowest rating since one of my least favorite episodes, Season 2, Episode 6, Secrets, which got 6.08 million viewers. So what this kind of tells me is, like, if you look at the two graphs, which are on our show doc and are published in the on the Facebook group, you'll see that it's like the viewers are going down, but the actual 18 to 49 ratings are going even lower. So I think older people are probably still watching live, or at least, you know, the 25 to 54 and up are still watching live compared to 18 to 49. And probably the 18 to 49 are watching it on demand now, or I hate to say, waiting to binge it at the end of the season, which I hate to say. I really do. Talking Dead also had poor ratings. It got a 0.85, which, other than when it's on after after Fear the Walking Dead, I cannot remember it getting less than a 1. I'd have to, and if it did, it was on at like 11 o'clock or something. Anyway, it got a 0.85 in the 18 to 49 with 2.321 million viewers. And this is down from last week, which is also low. It got a 1.06 with 2.651 million viewers. So not too good. And unless you found some news, I didn't really have a chance today to look at news, so I don't have anything, but I'll try to pull some for next week. Anyway,
I haven't found anything.
All right. Well, that's it for this week. So to submit your feedback, if you have theories about what's coming up, or you just want to submit your other kind of feedback, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio, use the SpeakPipe widget, or call 304-837-2278. Or like most people, we every week put a designated episode thread into the Facebook group, and you can post your feedback there. That's how almost all of the feedback that we got this week came. Some of the past feedback that we got that came different ways, like your brother's feedback came in that way through the Facebook form. Sorry, the feedback form, but every other piece of feedback came through the Facebook group, which is at facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm. And brand new for this week, I will say, if you aren't a member, Tara says,
are you kidding me?
I always have to find those. The deadline for submitting feedback, we're going to go back to the Tuesday deadline going forward. And if this changes, we will let you know. But we're going to keep Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, after the episode is aired. So another way you can reach us, and I know we've gotten some feedback this past week, and I didn't pull it from Ken from Chicago, but Ken, for all that you've said, and I didn't get a chance to look at it today. You may have posted more stuff. We'll try to get a bunch of stuff from you next week. On Twitter, that's at Walking Dead GSM. So, ways to support us. The best way to support us is tell your friends that watch The Walking Dead to subscribe to us, to join the Facebook group. The more the merrier. But you can basically help our rankings with other Walking Dead podcasts by subscribing. That makes Apple Podcasts tune up and go, hey, people are subscribing to them. And anyway, if you're there, and if you use Apple Podcasts, or if you use Stitcher, or we've never gotten a Stitcher review, but you can use goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple. If you listen to Apple Podcasts, that will bring you to all of the podcasts within the Golden Spiral Media Network. We haven't gotten any new reviews this week, but for those of you that have already given us a rating or review, thank you very much. Find out all the other ways to support GSM by going to goldenspiralmedia.com/support. All right, our next episode is Season 8, Episode 12, which is titled The Key. And sometimes Episode 12 is amazing, and sometimes it's not. So to take you on a little journey of Episode 12s, we have season 2, episode 12 was the episode that Shane died. Season 3, episode 12 was Clear. Season 4, episode 12, not my favorite. That was Still. That was the Beth and Daryl episode where they threw whiskey or whatever, moonshine.
Beth finally got drunk, and yeah. And then Daryl opened up to her, and then he was trying to sober her up.
Yeah. Not my favorite. Season 5, episode 12 was the first episode in Alexandria. That was called Remember. Season 6, episode 12 was Not Tomorrow Yet, which was an amazing episode. But season 7, episode 12, and I can't think of the name of the episode right now, but that was that one with the deer. So, like I say, some of them are really amazing episodes, and some of them are stinkers. So we don't know who's written or directed by, but we do know this description, and that's Hilltop's leadership faces a difficult dilemma after the arrival of unexpected visitors. And we can also say I've seen a couple of sneak peeks for this, and it looks like a pretty good episode. I think it's going to be on the positive side for this one coming and not on the negative.
Yeah, I believe so. I saw a few earlier today on I watch my Apple TV and I get the YouTube, and I looked at a little earlier, and they had the football car chase between Negan and Rick, which I'm liking that, because anything with cars and smacking and smashing, pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then there's a few other things in there too that points my interest. So I think we're going to get a little bit of action, a little bit more story. We'll go from there.
Yep. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I am Mark.
And this is the Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.